Our world is always moving, so with Merrill Lynch, you can get access to financial guidance online, in person, or through the app. Visit ml.com and learn more about Merrill Lynch, an affiliate of Bank of America. Merrill Lynch makes available products and services offered by Merrill Lynch, Pierce Fenner & Smith Incorporated, a registered broker-dealer, member SIPC.
My mission is simple, to make you money. I'm here to level the playing field for all investors. There's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise to help you find it. Mad Money starts now.
I'm Cramer. Welcome to Mad Money. Welcome to Cramerica. Other people want to make friends. I'm just trying to make you some money. It's my job is not just to entertain, but to educate and teach you. So call me at 1-800-743-CNBC or tweet me at Jim Cramer. This market's winners simply refuse to die. Every time you think they've buried technology stocks. Nah, it turns out to be the precisely the moment to buy them. Every time you think they've abandoned the growth stocks.
Sell, sell, sell.
Nah, they're right back there.
Buy, buy, buy.
Every time you've written off the industrials or decided the latest Fed rate hike means nothing to the banks, the money flows right back into the group. The result? A bountiful day. Where the Dow gained 145 points, S&P advanced 0.83%, both of them setting records, and the NASDAQ climbed 1.42%. That allowed us to overlook the continued supermarket carnage in the wake of the Amazon Whole Foods tie-up and reminds us that the NASDAQ doesn't just go down, which is what you felt like last week. Well, that's a good point, isn't it? Where were the buyers when these stocks were pummeled? What happened to those sellers who were just selling down, crushing stocks? Where'd they go? I think it's a great question, given how quickly this market has given up on each group, only to come back in the end. It is why I have urged you for years now to buy the dips endlessly, because the negativity gets so thick at the bottom that you can miss these opportunities unless someone reminds you that they're out there. Let me go over what each group is going for it so you know why I'm so adamant that you can come right back to them on weakness. Why don't we start with the financials? And not just because I have Lloyd Blankfein, the CEO of Goldman Sachs, on tonight. It's going to be good. The financials are a unique group. They're the only cohort that is dependent on two government entities, the Federal Reserve and Treasury, to do better. Right now, both organizations are blowing huge tailwinds toward the banks. I was pretty astonished last week that these stocks traded down when both the Treasury and the Federal Reserve gave them kisses. Treasury offered drastic regulatory relief, which would be so positive for many of the banks, especially Goldman. There's so much government-forced non-producing overhead at the banks that you can literally raise estimates if Treasury gets its way. Then the Federal Reserve gave them a second rate hike this year, and it's clear that the Fed wants rates higher, maybe dramatically on a percentage basis as fast as possible. There's nothing that creates more risk-free earnings for the banks than rate hikes. They make more on your deposits and don't pay you much more on your accounts or your certificates of deposit. It's just a plain old windfall for turning the lights on. Bank of America and JP Morgan are the biggest winners. But all the banks benefit. If you get regulatory relief, these companies will be able to use some of that gigantic excess capital that they have on their books to raise dividends and buy back stock, perhaps aggressively. How about tech? What happened here? You know, I got a list of the President's Historic American Technology Council Summit today, and it felt like a buy list for the action. Jeff Bezos from Amazon, Tim Cook from Apple, Satya Nadella from Microsoft, Alphabet's Eric Schmidt, Adobe Shantanu Narayan, who's going to be on our show on Wednesday. Of course, it's a happy coincidence, as this group would be on fire regardless of the meeting. Although when we interview Chris Liddell, he's the former Microsoft CFO, who's now the White House Director of Strategic Initiatives, he told us that only 3-4% of government business is on the cloud, and it has more than 6,000 data centers. Are you kidding me? That's absurd. It is easy to see that the government could save tens of billions of dollars with an aggressive cloud deployment, which would be fabulous for many of the companies. It seemed to be heavily weighted toward executives who do cloud work. More important, though, is that some monster seller of tech either walked away or finishes selling on Friday. This market is so darn thin that a couple of large sellers, I'm talking about people who sell millions of shares, mutual funds, hedge funds, can destroy the market, destroy the NASDAQ, especially when we have a lot of tag-along sellers blasting out of the QQQ. or shorting these stocks thinking that the selling will never end. Because you don't know when the selling will end, you have to buy the weakness in stages. Those who did last week were duly rewarded in a very short period of time. This was tech's best day of the year. All the stocks that did fly, especially Apple, have a good buy thesis, yet it didn't matter last week. Now as the stocks go up, we start hearing positive things. I'll tell you what's going to happen tomorrow because I've been in this business for so long. You know what's going to happen? The analysts are going to come out to remind us why we like these stocks in the first place. Where were the analysts last week? I'll show you where they were. Why don't I just do a little depiction? They were here. Okay? They were under here. They were hoping that no one would find them and they wouldn't get hurt. Sure enough, after today, they're out tomorrow, pounding the table. How about the drugs and the biotechs, which have been soaring? What's that all about? I think it's about a campaign promise going awry. The president's stillborn plan to cut the prices of drugs of all kinds. It just doesn't seem to be happening at all. There's no negotiation between the government and the drug companies over pricing. We thought that was going to happen. Remember, Trump mentioned that in his campaign bunches of times. On Friday, officials in the administration were trying to come up with some policy on pricing. They came up empty-handed. According to Politico, it's likely that Joe Grogan, he's the OMB's director of health programs, is crafting the executive order about pricing. Oh, that'd be fabulous news for the drug industry. Why? Because Grogan's previous job was the head of federal affairs for none other than Gilead, which created a hepatitis C cure that cost $80,000. Hard to believe he'll crack down on high prices for drugs. But remember, the bottom line is, there's always money that wants to play the trend of the day. And today the trend is to buy banks, tech, and healthcare. And all three are getting a boost from Washington. With Russia and healthcare reform off the table for a day, you can see what happens. These three sectors catch a fabulous bid. The seller walks away, and the stocks fly up in unison. And those who brave the negativity walk away all the wealthier. Those who panic, maybe next time you'll remember that no one ever made a dime panicking. Doug in Connecticut. Doug.
Jimmy.
Hey, hey.
How you doing?
I'm doing good. How about you?
I'm never better. Well above the norm, Jimmy.
All right.
So, hey, here's the question I have for you. So with the significant growth in P2P and P2B alternative payment options, you know, including the laundry list of cryptocurrencies and blockchain solutions,
all right,
you know, which can bypass some of these major networks. What are your thoughts on PayPal?
Oh, PayPal is the winner here. Dan Shulman is the winner. Everybody thought that Visa would crush them, the MasterCard would crush them, the Wells Fargo would crush them. Nobody crushed them. We came out on top. That situation is just beginning to monetize itself. I am a
bye-bye
PayPal. Why don't we go to Daniel in South Carolina? Daniel!
Hey, Jim, greetings from amazing Aiken, South Carolina. Hey, my beautiful mother worked for Estee Lauder in New York for many years. After she passed away at 92 this January, I bought Estee Lauder stock as a tribute to her on her birthday. The stock's up more than 25% year-to-date. While I'm sure my mom is looking over me and the stock, what do you think? Is EL a long-term hold, or has it had its run?
Well, I love you talking about your mom. It's fabulous. And the tribute to her, that you did real well. I'll tell you something. Estee Lauder, Fabrizio Freda, you don't sell that stock. You buy that stock. I would literally tell you, at the 52-week high today, still a buyer of EL Estee Lauder. Okay, what's trending? It's the bags. It's the tech. It's the healthcare. Every time you think it's a lost cause, they come right back. Now look at them fly right up. On Mad Money Tonight, the food and grocery industries are shaking in their boots following Amazon's decision to buy Whole Foods. I'll tell you what's to come in a second. You don't want to miss it. Then one of the most influential voices in American business, Lloyd Blankfein, on everything from the future finance to his recent critique of the Trump administration via tweet. The CEO of Goldman Sachs joins me right here tonight. And declining gas prices may have you thinking otherwise, but it's time to sit up and take notice of the energy space. I'm the only one who's doing it. I'll tell you why. Stick with Cramer.
Don't miss a second of Mad Money. Follow at Jim Cramer on Twitter. Have a question? Tweet Cramer. Hashtag Mad Tweets. Send Jim an email to madmoney@cnbc.com or give us a call at 1-800-743-CNBC. Miss something? Head to madmoney.cnbc.com.
Why are the food and grocery industry so frightened of the Amazon Whole Foods deal? I know that many investors were shocked at the visceral dumping of pretty much every retailer that could compete with the combination, both Friday and today.
Sell.
First, there was a shockwave here because most observers of the situation thought that the last thing CEO John Mackey would ever do is sell his company, Whole Foods, to Amazon. He's rigorously independent. The last few conference calls, he was defensive as all get out about how investors chronically underrated the profitability of his stores. Then when JANA Partners, an activist firm, came in and started bossing him around, it got pretty ugly, especially after Mackey dramatically upgraded his board, elevating Gabby Sulzberger, top-notch investment manager, to chairman, and adding the fabulous Ron Shaich, CEO of Panera Bread, who's created the finest loyalty plan and employed the best technology to get customers in and out without a mosh pit waiting area. No wonder Mackey called JANA greedy bastards in a recent interview and said that the activist fund was trying to destroy his reputation. It didn't matter what Mackey did. It wasn't enough for JANA. So he probably wanted to move on. He's a prickly soul. He doesn't need this aggravation. But let's go back to the explosive reaction from the stocks of so many retailers that also sell food and ask, is it an overreaction? The initial exaggerated prices on Friday, the ones that really just cratered to the floor, might be too much. And there was a bit of a rally as Friday session wore on. But sellers came back today. And if it weren't for the buy pressure on the S&P 500, I think all of the Whole Foods competitors would have been hammered again. Still, you want to know why it's so darned and justifiably ugly? Let me get personal for a couple seconds. In my long experience as a host and a business reporter for so many years, I've talked to a lot of executives. Everyone is conscious of the power of Amazon. Everyone. Most misjudge what it could do to books and entertainment. Then they misjudge what it could do to traditional retail in the mall. Oh, they aren't going to be blindsided again. So Friday's reaction was based on thousands of behind-the-scenes conversations like those I've had, where major executives had expressed concern about what would happen to their gross margins if Amazon were ever to move in their businesses. Why? For that, I want to talk about Pop, specifically my dad's business of selling boxes and bags to small retailers in the Philadelphia area. My father had a pretty thriving business in what's known as nameplate bags, the ones that have the store's name on them. Lots of his customers sold clothes and had years and years and years of successful sales. They're great business people. But then one day Walmart moved into the air. Walmart! Now, I'd been recommending the stock of Walmart at Goldman Sachs back in the 80s based on its fabulous growth, its low prices, even as I'd only been to a couple of its locations because they hadn't yet moved to the Northeast. I knew they had everyday lowest prices wherever they opened. Soon after Walmart landed and expanded, my father's longtime customers began to drop like flies. I heard Pop say to his brother, his partner at the time, that these fabulous long-term clients were all moaning that Walmart was selling shirts for the same price that his customers were buying them from the manufacturer. So there was simply no way they could mark them up. No way they could have any gross margins. Most of his customers were gone in 2 years' time after Wall Street invaded the Philadelphia area. 2 years! He had to pivot and start making doggy bags for restaurants. Kind of like this for mine. This was his last order because of how quickly Walmart destroyed the mom and pop businesses that had been fixtures in the Philadelphia area. Not that long ago, Walmart decided that it could integrate food into the mix. Many of us were skeptical that they could sell food next to hard goods and clothes. But within a few years, Walmart had succeeded in doing so. And now it's the number one grocery store in the country. How did Walmart do it? Simple. They were the lowest cost operator and they had a non-unionized, low paid workforce. Now comes Amazon, which is an even lower cost producer than Walmart. So it stands to reason that Walmart can do to Amazon can do to Walmart exactly what Walmart did to all those mom and pop outfits. That's right. Amazon's going to do to Walmart what Walmart did to the mom and pops. Not only that, but Amazon isn't just any low cost producer. It has tremendous artificial intelligence capabilities to let it figure out what you want, something that grocers have been woeful at. It has Amazon Prime, which can easily offer deals that would be unthinkable from, say, Kroger's point of view. The subscription revenue means they can afford to take a loss on some products to capture attention. Obviously, Amazon can offer all sorts of precisely timed delivery systems. You can use the Echo to order so easily as you look around your kitchen to what you need. You can install the Amazon button to buy certain staples and now fresh and prepared foods. A fingertip. Plus, in terms of keeping costs down, Amazon is the best checkout technology where I presume you can use your Apple phone, wand goods, get out without checkers. Something that saves a huge amount in labor costs, gets rid of one of the principal complaints about Whole Foods. Endless checkout lines. A lot of people seem to be caught up in how expensive Whole Foods stuff food is right now. So who'd want to go there? Oh, come on. That's presuming Amazon won't change pricing for the better. Nobody I know believes that Whole Foods offers bad food, just the opposite. Now they can start selling it at reasonable prices, or they can sell close to cost if they want to make an impact. So not only do I think the negative reaction to the food stocks and the grocers and other retailers who sell food will prove to be right, I recognize there will be some remarkable transformations ahead. I am sure, for example, that in the short term, traders will want to buy Kroger, right? Betting it won't feel the impact of Amazon for a couple of years. That's why it rallied today. I think that's short-sighted. I could argue that the two new German entrants, Aldi and Lidl, would be enough to send Kroger down further than it sank after Thursday's weak forecast. I bet the drugstore stocks, though, and the packaged goods place can bounce. I expect mergers in the latter. Nevertheless, anyone who thinks that Amazon won't do to Walmart what Walmart did to my father's customers just hasn't lived it. You have to have lived it to know. Otherwise, it's too theoretical to understand. Let me give you the bottom line here. Believe me, there's nothing theoretical about what Amazon's about to do to these industries. It's now a reality for everyone from Costco to CVS to Walmart and Target. And the pain, it hasn't even begun yet. Mike in Rhode Island. Mike!
Jim, thanks for taking my call.
Of course.
This is, I just wanted to tell you, this is the best show on television.
Oh, you're too kind. Thank you.
All right, buddy. My question is, now that Amazon acquired Whole Foods, how do you think this is going to affect UPS?
You know what? I have a feeling that UPS is about to do something. I think they're going to put a residential surcharge on peak weeks during the holidays. And I think that that's because their networks are overwhelmed. And that's something you have to look for. FedEx is going to be talking later this week. Look for surcharges that make it so that UPS might be a buy here. All right, Amazon. It is a force to be reckoned with like none other. Other food and grocery stores are right to be frightened. Much more Mad Money at, including my exclusive Goldman Sachs' Lloyd Blank find. Then did you miss the multi-billion-dollar buy in the energy space like everybody else did? Don't worry, I'll fill you in. And, of course, your calls. Rapid fire, tonight's edition of the Lightning Round. Stick with Cramer. We're very excited to have a special guest with us tonight. One of the most important people, the financial firm specifically, and the business world in general, the CEO and chairman of Goldman Sachs, Lloyd Blankfein. Lloyd, welcome to Mad Money. Good to see you.
Hey, Cramer. Good to see you.
Good to see you. Have a seat. Well, we go way back, so we can go over a full range of issues, but I am thrilled that you're here. Thank you so
Great
much.
Great to be here.
I want you to just give us a sense of where things are. I mean, you just came back from China. You're obviously following what's going on with the government. You know what's going on with the markets. I think people want to know what Lloyd Blankfein is just thinking right now about the world.
No, I'd say things are pretty good. If you looked at things statistically, you looked at the numbers, you looked at the metrics, U.S. at full, actually full employment,
right.
Low energy prices, growth. A lot of the metrics are all positive. Most of the areas of the world are growing. Again, not great trajectory
right.
of growth,
right.
but they're growing. China is, and I just got back from
right.
China. China's doing okay. Europe, again, 2%-ish, or just maybe a little bit under that, is not so bad given where our expectations were. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things that are going wrong, but it's not obvious that they have to go wrong.
Right. How about the United States? What is your feeling about what Trump's doing? I know you have, obviously, Gary Cohn in the administration. I'd love to know what your relationship with him is, or the Treasury Secretary, if there still can be one. But whether the administration's fulfilling some of the things that you thought could happen when Trump was elected.
Yeah. You know, I can't say that I'm on all fours in line with the administration, you know, across the board.
Well, we'll get to your tweeting in a second.
But as far as the economy's going, as far as markets are going, they represented stimulus in the form of lower taxes, spending on infrastructure, taking away maybe some of the layers and layers and layers and redundant regulations. And that's basically good, certainly good for the market, but generally, I think, good for the economy. I know that there's some people who believe, as do we all, that sensible regulation is good. But, mm-hmm. you know, there was some redundancies and, you know, there's been a bit of a wax buildup as layers and layers have gotten on it and no doubt impeded the economy. And he represented trying to deal with it. Now, the devil, of course, is in the detail and how you look at it depends on what you wanted. But, you know, in any case, it seems to have gotten bogged down
right.
in the issue. I'd say the market now is not what he wants to do, but whether he'll be effective in accomplishing it.
Do you think he will, given the fact that it's late June? We've not seen the infrastructure that I know would be great, that I know that you favor. We have not seen the lower taxes. We kind of got bogged down on health care and these Russian issues.
Yeah, well, I think, it's not going to retrogress. It's not going to get to a worse place.
Okay, fair
point. That's one thing. And by the way, again, not talking about politics across the board or decisions that you'd make with outside of the general economy, but you certainly were looking, the market was discounting in terms of the alternative to Trump, was discounting higher taxes, potentially more regulation, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
So already there had to be an adjustment just to get back to the neutral.
Right.
And then, of course, the market is he won't accomplish very much versus he might accomplish a lot, and it's somewhere in between. And that's the variability in the market.
But why did it take so long after this Great Recession? Why? It's just a really much worse time than we realized.
I'll give you my point of view. This is, I'm not an economist, but if you ask me, I'm more of a history guy than that. But, you had a severe banking crisis, which always takes time to sort out because, again, banks are, in a lot of ways, the transmission mechanism for economic growth. You can change interest rates, but at the end of the day, someone has to lend, and the banks have to be in better shape, so they have to be recapitalized. There has to be the legislation. So if you do it by comparison to the Great Depression, that took 10 years to sort out. Right. At the end of the day, this might also take 10 years to sort through. But the big credit that I think the official sector deserves in this, that it wasn't severe. It wasn't as severe. Obviously, it was severe, but not as severe across the board for everyone. We didn't have 25% unemployment in the country. In fact, it never got to really 10% unemployment. And I think all that stimulus, all that interest rates being dropped to zero, all that quantitative easing in this country achieved, it was a very shallower recession.
Then it could have.
Everybody's commenting on how shallow the recovery has been. And if you look at how long the last major catastrophe, if you will, for the economy took it. It was a shallow recession, you could say.
Now, speaking of shallow, Goldman Sachs got hit in a very shallow way and really came through great. And it's a kind of an interesting moment because, for instance, as an alumnus of Goldman, I was very proud about how Goldman did during the period. But some people feel that it wasn't right to do well during that period and that you didn't necessarily get to be able to define your narrative as a successful bank that we should cheer as one that necessarily where we should jeer because you did so well.
Well, let me say that this was there were two parts of the crisis, really, for us. One was, I'll call it generally, for the banks as a whole, the existential period.
Okay.
Who is, who's solvent, who isn't, who had, if you recall, before TARP, we got financing in the public market, and also from Warren Buffett, and then the TARP happened. But it was a very nervous time for all of us. And at that point, again, the existential part for banks and for other people and people who rely on banks, companies who rely on banks, which is every company in the long run, it was a very difficult period. And then when we got through, let's say, that existential, when the market had stabilized and we knew, anybody who was going under was going under, anybody who needed to merge with another entity had merged with another entity, we had kind of what for us and others, but us especially, the reputational phase where it went from, kind of marveling, how did we do it? How did you do it? To how did you do it? And what did we,
right.
We
and do? Then Justice Department
and then,
gets
involved. And people looking at, and of course, none of that, came to anything. But at the time, obviously very disconcerting.
But you still got fined.
Well, we got fined, but everybody got fined.
Right.
And we got fined for, in some cases, listen, Everybody came through that period. It was like as if there must have been a virus because every financial institution that was active got fined for the same bad behavior, which meant it was, look, at that point, there was a housing crisis.
Right.
People had lent money on the basis that housing prices could go down, but only a certain amount. And when they went down a certain amount, it would be in a narrow area, not every place at once. Well, housing prices went down essentially like 40% everywhere. And that never had happened before. And so people didn't anticipate and people got it wrong.
Right. And they'll get it wrong again, right?
They'll get it wrong again. And once you get something wrong, it's hard to go back and imagine that somebody bad behavior.
Right.
But who got it right? Did the Fed get it right? Did the pundits get it right? Did all the observers of the financial market who were active then say, You're lending too much money against real estate.
Right.
This is a dangerous thing. And so the whole world got, it was a bubble that burst.
Right.
And in hindsight, I'm much better identifying bubbles in hindsight than I am in foresight.
Right, but you're not excusing. I mean, everyone was fined. I mean, there was. That's the way it worked in the country.
That's the way. Well, that's the way it worked. And you know something? Not only am I not denying it, I'm not even denying the fairness. Look how many people that were hurt. That were a million miles away from ground zero.
Right.
And if they were hurting, people were looking, you know, at the end of the day, people borrowed too much money, which meant that people lent them too much money. And, you know, if you want to look around, it was a bubble. Let's not make a big mistake like
that. But let's not dwell on the past now. The firm has changed in radical ways in terms of the way it looks, which I like. You've had the change in terms of the personnel, how you get people. It's kind of interesting versus when I applied in the early 80s. And it's
Know that we worked together for a long time?
We know each other.
So I don't want to.
You were very kind to me.
No, I have to.
Yes, go ahead.
Right. I was very kind to you. Jim, you've always thought that I was kind to you because you were doing a rotation as a new employee, covering people, and so they sent you around from place to place, and you always remarked how nice I was to you.
You were incredible.
Well, I was trading. I was in the commodities business at that time. No one ever visited us. The fact that you came down, I was nice to you because we were lonely. No one ever spoke to us. So when you came down, of course I was nice to you because we had company at last.
All I can tell you is everyone treated me very roughly, and you were welcoming. And it was like I went home and called my mom, and I said, "This guy was so nice to me."
Well, I don't want to hurt your reputation at all. But people, I don't think people realize just how good your pedigree is, because I know you from again way back when.
And yes,
Harvard College, Harvard
yes,
Law School, and I think people don't know that. I think people know you're the editor of the Harvard Crimson.
Yeah,
this is the single most prestigious thing you can do at Harvard. Another person who had that job was Franklin Roosevelt, which really is mind-boggling.
Yeah, well,
that you and Franklin Roosevelt are just going to answer the same trivia question.
Well, yes. Thank you, Lloyd. Thank you. You know what? We're going to come back. We're going to talk more about. Thank you for that. That's very sweet. Thank you. We're going to talk more with the chairman and CEO of Goldman Sachs, Lloyd Blankfein, in a moment. Back with Lloyd Blankfein, Chairman, CEO of Goldman Sachs. Lloyd, you're tweeting. What is that all about?
You know, I agree. It's not for an institutional kind of firm like us. It's not that usual. But I tell you, part of it, you asked me about the financial crisis before. In the financial crisis, there was nobody knew anything about what Goldman Sachs did.
No.
What, you know, the value we create, what we do in the communities. Also, the importance we do in raising capital for people who need capital, helping them to create business, hire people, the virtuous circle of employed people buying more. It's quite virtuous. We know it.
Yeah.
And I said, if this ever happens again, I'm not going to allow there to be a vacuum about what we're like. We're going to have to communicate to the world more of what we do, which we've done institutionally, but also there's a personal element to it, too. And although the financial crisis, receded a while ago, we kind of never picked up on it. And
I just thought 3 out of 6 of these, Lloyd, are, I would say, antagonistic to the president.
Well, I'd say that comment. Now, I've always commented on certain issues, and this is how I think of it. I don't use that platform for Lloyd Blankfein's personal point of view because I know I'm interesting to people because of my role at Goldman.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my role at Goldman, so I communicate, and I've done it before by press release. You recall, I commented on immigration. I commented on LGBT issues.
Right.
I commented, obviously, on the environment more recently, spending on infrastructure. And the reason why I do it, it has to fall into my mind in one of a couple of categories. Either it's something that is kind of in our wheelhouse of expertise.
Mm-hmm.
So I comment it would be very, very bad to let the U.S. government default.
Right.
That's in
right.
our wheelhouse. Before Twitter, I did those things by press release. The other thing I'll comment on is when things really affect the ability of our people to be who they are and to do their job and to be effective as professionals. And that's like the LGBT, the immigrant ban, so that people couldn't move around with their spouses who may have had a passport for another country. So I commented on those issues because, really, I kind of have to be the champion of our people, and I kind of owe it to the body politic to comment where I have expertise. They could take my advice or not. I don't make decisions, but I do give them our expertise.
Okay, and speaking of wheelhouse, you're doing some different things involving investors that I would never, that you would have been furious at had I gone after when I was a Goldman?
Well, so we are traditionally an institutional wholesale business. We deal with big companies, the biggest institutions, governments.
Richest people.
And one of the things that we started to do, and this is a little bit part regulation because the world kind of favors lending over a lot of other activities that we do, like market making and other kinds of investing. And so what we've done is we've augmented the lending part of our business. And one place where we thought we could really fulfill an important business purpose, but also an important social purpose, is non-recourse lending to consumers. And so we have this platform called Marcus, which is named after our founder, Marcus Goldman. And we do loans between $3,500 and $30,000. We distribute this online. And now I'm very conscious of the limits of our expertise and what we're good at.
But it's
at
big
and
data. You obviously are relying on.
But see, that's how the world has evolved. Right. Because, again, these non-recourse loans that we provide, a lot of the, you know, it's about risk management. It's about digital experience, about distributing things digitally. It's about algorithmic kind of approaches to risk management. Really in our wheelhouse, really stuff that historically we've been good at. It's also about customer experience. And that we were not, we had not a lot of experience at that. We imported some of that. But if in the whole 360-degree pie of what you need, that's not the biggest part of this. But we are determined to get that right, too.
But this has to bring down the gross margins. I mean, you are
no, I think, you know, let me just say that the business as it exists today of unsecured lending to individuals is mostly accomplished through credit card balances. And I think, as you know, most people get charged interest of 17, 18, 19, 20% or more on their credit card balances. When we do something through Marcus, again, we don't have a lot of stores or branch offices.
Right.
We do things digitally, no fees, get information online, and loans are made fairly quickly. And by the way, very, very easy about kind of flexible on how we organize it. Our rates are 300-500 basis points lower than that.
Okay.
And that serves a real purpose. And by the way, we did a lot of studying of this, and we had a lot of sessions. We talked to thousands of people as we were developing this product, and I talked to consumers and users of this. And I'll tell you, they're really good people, terrific people, who had a little, rain in their lives or clouds or some need that came up, have to repair a roof, have to get work done on, on your teeth or your kid's orthodonture. They just come up in the normal course of life.
But is some of this, I mean, when I worked at Goldman, you were supposed to be public service, and it then got determined as being Goldman Sachs, which was then somehow venal when it wasn't. Is this an attempt by Goldman to be able to show a more human face than just working with wealthy people?
Let me be clear. This business, the way the margins are in the way credit card balances are charged out, there's plenty of room for us to
make
a great return on this and still do something that that's beneficial to the consumer. Of course, if it wasn't beneficial to the consumer, we'd have no place in this and had no role. By the way, we just crossed over $1 billion.
Okay.
And by the end of this year, we'll be crossed $2 billion. So we wanted to grow it slow to make sure we were doing a good job, but we're going to grow. We're going to grow this thing.
But where are you politically these days? I mean, for instance, I think people didn't understand the Mrs. Clinton role with Goldman. It was not really a speech that your partners were all fired up about, right?
No. We entertain. We hold a lot of conferences, and we hold a lot of where we inject a lot of content to client base. And by the way, our client base is mostly professional money managers.
Right.
You remember that. And so we bring in speakers, and sometimes you pay speakers. So we paid her as a speaker to talk to our clients, not to speak.
Concert.
If it was a rock star, it would have cost a bit more money.
Okay. Now, how about your relationship with Gary Cohn? Because you talked to Gary every day before. Now, how do you keep this from being a nefarious nexus? And Treasury Secretary Mnuchin. I mean, these are people, old friends. You work with them for years. How do you deal with that?
Well, the fact is, and it's sad for me in a way, that I talk to them, a lot less. And you're a little bit sensitive to not wanting to go in. And again, the fact of the matter is, anybody in my job would always talk from time to time to the Treasury Secretary, right, the National Income Advisor. We're one of the biggest underwriters of government debt, so of course you would. But I'm a little, you know, you get apprehensive about it. You know, this is a kind of a punishing for us. Not only do we lose people that at times we'd like to keep, but when they're in that office, we're a little apprehensive about engaging with them. That happened in the financial crisis when my predecessor, Hank Paulson, was Secretary of the Treasury.
Right.
And for a long time, until he got a formal release, he didn't engage me directly. He talked to me through some other official in the Department of Treasury, which was a little bit, it wasn't as helpful as it might have otherwise be. It wasn't as helpful for him, and it wasn't as helpful for us.
Okay, well, how about you, Lloyd? If we're coming out of school now, do you think it would be Google, would be Facebook, or would you still go Wall Street? Would you go west with the great opportunities? Would you go east with just paper and money?
Well, I came out of school and I practiced law. So let's put that aside for almost 5 years. I'd say today, you know, I don't know. I like finance. I like the fact that I engage. You know, we're the kind of predicate for a lot of other business activity.
Right.
So to me, it's like, through the course of it, I'll talk to people, and I'll talk to people in retail. I'll talk to people who are industrialists, who are manufacturers, right, traders. And you know something? It's a very interesting kind of engagement for me. So I don't know. This, my after-acquired experience has taught me that I must like this because I've been doing it an awful long time.
And you obviously don't want to leave. You're not up for the, you know, Federal Reserve chairman. These are things abstract, right?
Well, kind of abstract.
Right, kind of abstract.
But right now, I like what I'm doing.
But can we, if you didn't have the Volcker Rule, I used to be there when you would print what was known as principal stuff. It took me a long time, where you would buy customers' goods. And it used to be a much more orderly market when you're allowed to do that. Volcker
right.
has made it so you can't do what you used to do.
No, well, we're still principals, but it's much more cumbersome, much more difficult,
yes,
and much more, without buying, in my view, without barring any more safety right. or soundness, just very cumbersome because of all the things you could do. You could regulate capital, you could
right.
regulate leverage, you can regulate. Volcker Rule is like a test of motivation. If
right.
you put
yeah,
on a position
do-
because you're market making, you're okay. If you're doing it other than in anticipation of a near-term customer, who thinks like that?
I know.
And
right.
so it's, you know, there's some aspects of that that have to change. But the overall need to regulate activity is good for us. Look, the biggest risk of Goldman Sachs during the financial crisis is that our counterparties might not be good
right.
for
not,
it.
It's not you.
We,
were, right.
we knew where we were,
right.
and fine, we were worried about our counterparties. So to the extent that you have certain things like stress tests, higher capital rules, certain kind of leverage tests that make sense, it's fine. But if you put layers and layers and belts and suspenders and another belt and another
right.
suspender, you bog down the system and you don't get to accomplish your social purpose.
Hopefully that goes away. Now, speaking of social purpose, it is important for me to mention you do a tremendous amount of charity. The firm has always done very what's known as, it was government service then, but it's
yep.
accepted and promoted and demanded.
Well, all our people always, you know, when I got to be partner, there were two things I was taken aside and said, you're the two things among others that we,
right.
but very important things. You should have a charitable foundation.
Right.
We expect you to go on charitable boards and give money away. And the second one was you should organize your life, your professional life, so that if at the end of your life they write an obituary about you and has nine, this is a little bit morbid, but they write nine paragraphs, no more than three should mention Goldman Sachs. In other words, do something else.
Do something else. That was exactly what I was told
service,
by Mr. Menschel.
Run a philanthropy.
Right.
Do something that involves public service, and which people do. And there was a period of time where people were scorned for forsaking very high-paying jobs
right.
at the height of their earning power to leave the company and go into public service. Now, a lot of times when people have put that, you know, again, that scornful term government Sachs
right.
as if it were a bad thing, it's sort of implying that we take people from government to support our business.
It's
the other way around. People, government draws largely... Government draws from us. There's some going the other way, but mostly it's government draws talent from us, and they largely don't come back.
Well,
they
go
on to other things.
All right, lastly, Janet Yellen, doing a good job.
I think Bernanke and Yellen, that link up together, maybe, as I said in the beginning of this thing, they are responsible for why we had we may be complaining about the shallow recovery, but we didn't have a deep depression. And I think the aggressive way in which they... You know, it's the end of the day. If we end up suffering some inflation at the end of the day, which, by the way, there had been no signs of,
right.
which everybody was wringing their hands over and still not enough of a sign, there's a playbook for dealing inflation. There is no playbook yet for dealing with deflation, and they managed to avoid that by their kind of innovative policies, that they were aggressive. And I say took a lot of courage because all the naysayers were saying against them and were lined up against them if it went wrong. And you can't, you look at it now and everyone is worried about this, worried about this, but it hasn't gone wrong yet.
All right, let's leave it at that. That's Lloyd Blankfein, the chairman and CEO of Goldman Sachs. Lloyd, thank you so much for coming
Thank
on
you, there, Kramer.
Great to talk to you.
Be good.
It is time. It's time for the light round. Good luck. We're back for goals. We're going to save the And then the light round is over. Are you ready, Ski Daddy? It's time for the light round. Kramer, Mama, start with Eric in Florida. Eric!
Hi, Kramer. Watch your show every day.
Thank you, man.
What do you think about AT&T?
I like AT&T. I like the dividend. I like the growth prospects. And I thank you for watching me every day. Got great viewers. What can I say? All right, let's go to Dave in Connecticut. Dave.
Jim, my stock is At Home Group, symbol home. What?
Well, we liked it. We said it was one of those IPOs that nobody cared about, and it was so right. It's like Canada Goose. Nobody cared about that one either. Another good one. Let's go to Daryl in Arizona. Daryl.
Jim Cramer.
Yes.
I would like to talk about Marathon Oil.
I like to talk about Marathon Pete. I think that's the much better one. That's the refiner. That's a good situation. Not Marathon Oil MRO. Let's go to Dave in New York. Dave. Dave, you're up.
Yes.
Go ahead.
All right. I want to get your take on the stock Conduent, CNDT.
Yeah, I looked at Conduent because it's, you know. You know what? We're going to have to come back. They're right in Basking Ridge. We should have them on. I got to do more work on Kanye. We have a little homework coming up. Let's go to Dennis in Nevada. Dennis.
Hi, Jimmy. Booyah to you.
Booyah.
Thanks for taking my call. I love your show. I
Thank
certainly
you.
Admire your energy. Tell
Thank
me
you.
About Ultra Clean, UCTT.
Yeah, this is just a great ancillary semiconductor play. I've liked it for a long time. I think it's a buy. And that, ladies and gentlemen, included up there. Lightning Round!
The Lightning Round is sponsored by TD Ameritrade.
Why does everyone hate oil and gas so much? I've got to tell you, the hatred may be at multi-year highs levels, rivaling the hideous days back in 2016. When oil collapsed to the mid-20s. I find that so odd when you consider oil seems to have found its footing in the 40s. Many of our companies are profitable at these levels. Wall Street may be blind to the profitability levels and the values that are being created by the selling on Wall Street, but the companies themselves aren't. That's why we should sit up and take notice of a huge deal today. EQT buying Rice Energy for $6.7 billion, giving Rice shareholders a 25% pop in today's trading. I think the biggest values here are being created by the fantastic oil drilling techniques in the Permian, what we talked about just last week. But the ones that are producing oil in the 30s and a nice profit with oil in the 40s. But this deal unites two powerful forces in the Marcellus and Utica shales, with EQT consolidating 187,000 acres of the Marcellus and 65,000 acres of Utica, a shale I visited a few years back in Ohio. And all I can say is, wow. With natural gas at $3, a dollar above where it was last year, and Rice's $1.12 all-in cost of production, this is a remarkable deal that will make fortunes for EQT shareholders who are taking very short-sighted view when it got hit so hard today. There was a time when this natural gas would have been landlocked. Now, though, there are pipelines to the east to replace retiring coal and nuclear power plants and pipelines to the south for export and manufacturing. The pipelines to the south are reverse operations. They were built to transport imports and southern natural gas, but they are now set up in the other direction, a true triumph over exploitation of what many say is the largest natural gas field outside of Qatar. For the record, if there's going to be more consolidation, I think there will, not that anyone else seems to care about this except for me, Cabot Oil and Gas, with similar all-in costs for natural gas, will likely be the center of attention. Southwestern, a total down-and-outer, it's centered in natural gas, is also a natural target. Why does everyone hate this group so much? Because the group is largely viewed as a destroyer of your performance, and any speculation in the patch has been a nightmare for anyone who has ventured into it, a virtual roach motel for portfolio managers. This EQT for Rice deal shows us that portfolio managers can shun the group all they want. It just creates the values that are obvious to the companies themselves who are happy to do some buying at prices well below the cost of drilling itself. Stick with Cramer. Fins, techs, and drugs, they're going to stay hot for a little bit. Like I said, there's always a bull market somewhere. I promise I'll find it just for you right here on Mad Money. I'm Jim Cramer, and I will see you tomorrow.